Sorry, it's just because I take notes as I go. Hilary Lennox from Ahika Consulting. You are the Ahika Consulting that I know, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, there's not two of you.
No. Based in Dunedin, but I'm actually based in Cromwell.
Ah,
yeah.
Thank you.
I am the Central Otago office.
Ah.
Yeah. Kia ora koutou, my name is Hilary Lennox, and I've been working in the resource consenting space for over 12 years. 5 years, actually, as a senior consents officer at Otago Regional Council. 2 years as the consents manager at Environment Southland. And I said, currently working for Ahika Consulting, and I have a couple of deemed permit applications lodged with ORC. So, just wanted to start by saying, you know, Otago is one of the most geographically diverse regions in the country. I've worked on water permit applications from tiny ephemeral creeks in semi-desert areas right through to large-scale irrigation and municipal water supply permits from the most voluminous river in the country. Some of these activities occur only a few kilometres from each other. Every watercourse is hydrologically unique, holds different values, and provides for different uses. Regarding the Skelton Report, Professor Skelton notes that planning by consent is not acceptable, but I would urge ORC to be very careful about one-size-fits-all approaches, because in my experience, one size does not fit all in Otago. I'm concerned that some of the recommendations in the Skelton Report are based on some very broad generalisations and, in fact, some errors, as also raised by previous speakers. Other consultants and irrigators have also raised their concerns about interim short-term consents, which I generally concur with. However, the ORC has made a commitment to actioning the Minister's recommendations and to provide a pathway for short-term consents. So let's talk about those. The term of the interim consents. It is clear that the intention of the interim consents is to ensure that their replacement consents are assessed under the new land and water plan. Minister Parker suggested that the interim consents could, for example, be for a maximum of 5 years or until the new plan becomes operative. I didn't read anywhere where the Minister said that it must be 5 years. If the expiry date on the interim consents is the same date on which the new land and water plan becomes operative, this doesn't allow any time for the replacement applications to be processed. In this scenario, applications to replace the interim consents will need to be made well in advance of the new land and water plan becoming fully operative, which means that these applications will need to be assessed under more than one regional plan, which could be extremely cumbersome and could lead to perverse outcomes. I would suggest that the expiry date on the interim consents needs to be at least 2 years beyond the date on which the new land and water plan becomes operative, if applications to replace the interim consents are to be assessed under the new land and water plan only. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Water allocation. ORC have decided that allocation on the interim consents will be based on existing use rather than paper allocation. I'm referring to the letter to the Minister, which is perfectly reasonable and is consistent with existing policy 6.4.2a. However, this policy has not been applied consistently by ORC staff in the past, and there's been a lot of confusion regarding why some approaches have been taken. I recommend that the interim plan change provides clear guidance on how historic use data will be interpreted to ensure a consistent approach by all ORC staff when considering rates and volumes. The reason for these methods must be clearly articulated, bearing in mind that the purpose of the interim plan change is not to claw back allocation that has been utilised in the past. Note that many irrigators have had issues with their data, often not always their fault, and there have been several very wet seasons in the past few years, so it would be reasonable for ORC to consider other supporting information that the irrigator may wish to provide rather than focusing on the data alone. Speaking from experience, it's very easy to sit in the office in Dunedin and just look at the numbers on the screen, but that doesn't really provide the context for reality sometimes or often. Minimum residual flows. As noted by some of the previous speakers, setting of residual flows is not a simple, straightforward process at all, and I would suggest that consideration of what ideal residual flows look like and how they should be measured is best saved for the new land and water plan. Regarding minimum flows, one of the reasons why an overhaul of the current planning framework has been asked for is because there isn't enough information or agreement as to what the minimum flows should be. This cannot be resolved under the interim plan change. Reiterating what previous presenters have said, we need to keep this interim plan change simple so that it doesn't detract from the longer-term vision. last couple of sentences. Note that it is possible to assess a consent application and ensure that the resulting proposal is consistent with the national policy statement, even if the regional water plan is lacking. And I'm referring to the Lindis case. And so some irrigators may still choose to pursue a longer-term consent. If ORC's desire is for most irrigators to pursue the short-term option, then the interim plan change needs to provide a very attractive, cost-effective option. In closing, having worked on both sides of the fence, I strongly encourage that council staff work collaboratively with the experienced practitioners. A lot of them are here today. Collectively, the consultants and the irrigation companies have been operating this space for many decades and can offer a wealth of experience and practical solutions. Due to high staff turnover in recent years, ORC's reserves of knowledge and experience have become depleted, but this can be complemented and enhanced through genuine collaboration with the experienced practitioners. Central and local government can provide the vision, but the strategy for achieving that vision is not going to be successful unless the stakeholders are included in the co-creation of solutions. At Environment South, and we hosted very successful regular consultants forums, but I imagine that something much more intense is required here given the rate of change. I'm happy to provide recommendations for ORC if requested. After all, we are all in this together.
Thank you very much. You have prompted me to think that idea of a consultants forum is actually an interesting one, worth exploring. Thank you. Okay, the next person is, I've lost myself.
It's time.
Boyd McDonald.
Boyd McDonald. I'm sorry, Boyd, you're not Rory McLean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to present today. I am Boyd McDonald. My position is CEO of Lone Star Farms. Lone Star Farms is a farmer that has land in the Strathtyre catchment. We farm about 3,000 hectares there. Nice. Of which about 550 hectares is under irrigation. A lot of what I wanted to say today has been already said, so I'll summarise, but as farmers, we've been encouraged to come forward with catchment-by-catchment solutions to this, so an overall blanket approach that makes no sense at all. And, as somebody already said, that one size does not fit all. I want to explain to you why I believe the five-year extension is not practical and a nonsense for the Tauri catchment, and also want to explain what we have been doing as farmers to get ready for this process for the renewal of October 2021, because we've known about the state for an extremely long time. Five-year permits for the Tauri are a nonsense for the Tauri catchment and the farmers left to replace it. As Susie McKeag's already pointed out, 78% of the water in this catchment has already been reallocated, only leaving just over 20% to be allocated. And many of these farmers have already lodged applications to have these deemed rights moved into consents. The catchment has already got a minimum flow set for different parts of the river, and we will be managing to try to achieve that. As farmers, we have anticipated a thorough assessment in the renewal process, and as such, prepared complex and comprehensive applications at quite some cost to us. I'd just like to give some examples of that from our point of view at the Wandle. We've recently conducted our fish surveys on our streams, so we could get expert recommendation on habitat requirements for in-stream life as part of our replacement process going forward. As farmers on the main stem of the river between Sutton and Tauriti, we've voluntarily tried to manage and to that minimum flow for the last few years through the dry summers, and have done so quite successfully. So it's an example of the community moving forward, working together, and trying to manage the best outcomes for our environment. You look at what's going around in social media and the media currently. Contrary to these reports, farmers do care about their environment and take great pride in having good stewardship to to do this. At the Wandle for close on five years, we've been measuring water quality in all our streams. So we have a comprehensive set of data that can prove that we are not having an adverse effect on water quality and our environment. Voluntary, we've also had a farm environment plan that's audited annually in place for the last 3 years, and that has seen us fence over half our waterways out already, and have also got plans to have everything done by 2023. We've also put in reticulated water schemes right through the whole of the Wandle property, so no stock needs to access streams to access water. We purchased a neighbouring property of 550 hectares in March. That property has also had a reticulated water scheme put in place, so no stock has to access waterways for water. I guess what I'm trying to say is that irrigation development and driving efficiencies in the use of our water, an example of this would be at Wandle, where we've converted 200 hectares of K-line irrigation into variable rate centre pivot irrigation. So no water is actually moving through the profile of the soil. Everything else, this comes at a huge investment. This is over $10,000 a hectare we're talking about. It's a long-term investment with a long payback period. Short-term water rights do not cut the mustard. As I say, we just bought another 550 hectares in the area. Plan is to do another 150 hectares from K-line into the centre pivot. As I say, long payback period, and we need some security around our water take to be able to invest in this. Also, we'll be looking at perhaps some horticulture-type crops, perennial-type crops that will help grow the wealth of the area and offer employment opportunities. Again, these are long-term investments that cannot be done on a short-term view or a short-term five-year permit. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Can I now... The next person who was due to come up was Hamish Stratford, but he is unable to attend. So we're moving to Issy Anderson, a Cardrona permit holder. Issy, are you here? Oh, you are. It's that very large pillar does me in. Issy, thank you.
So, good morning. My name's Izzy Anderson. I'm a sixth-generation farmer and a member of the Cardrona Water Users Group and an irrigator based in the Cardrona Valley. My husband and I and the rest of our family farm 6,300 hectares, mostly pastoral lease and some freehold. That boundaries with the Cardrona Ski Area, the Stack Conservation Area and Matatapu Station. We supply Merino New Zealand and have contracts with Icebreaker, Smartwool and Raider, and they all have strict sustainability clauses that we have to adhere to, and they are audited every year. We also have beef cattle and sell store lambs and beehives. Our property is extensive and it has extremes of weather in both the winter and the summer, which makes a very small area of irrigation by percentage absolutely crucial for our wintering but also for our summer feed. We currently irrigate roughly 150 hectares and we use K-line and big gun irrigation to do that. The ability to grow feed on the irrigated areas allows for the hill to be spelled over the summer and to recover enough that we can have the stock running all year round on the property. It improves animal health and the productivity. All of the ORC minimum flow documentation and the LAWA website show the water quality is good in the Cardrona catchment. We've had the data loggers testing on ours, and we have a regular ORC quality test done on the main tributaries that run through our property. The irrigation in the valley primarily supports dryland farming. There's only one property that has anything other than dryland. It's a very low risk to water quality degradation. Since 2003, collectively, we've been working towards changing our irrigation systems in the valley to various spray methods from the traditional control floods that my grandfather and great-grandfather used. This has enabled us to meter and collect the information needed to be able to apply for the resource consents, but more importantly, it's enabled us to access areas that the control flooding wouldn't irrigate and turn those into some of the most productive areas on the property. It's also come at a huge financial cost. There are several properties that still have deemed permits, mostly on tributaries. Most of the main stem have been through their permit process in 2013. And they need replacing with resource consents by 2021, including three that we have on our property that McKee Consultancy are doing. Most of the deemed permits that have already been converted to resource consents, because they were done in 2013, have got end dates of 2048 to 50 and on, which means issuing short-term permits for the remainder is pretty unfair to be going on with. Short-term resource consents have a massive detrimental effect on our business. How can we plan 5, 10, 20 years in advance and have confidence from our financial backing if our most essential aspect of our business, that is the ability to grow feed, is open to be removed? Long-term planning gives a better environmental, social and financial outcome. The applications for the permits that need to be done by 2021 will be complete and detailed so that long-term consents in line with the rest of the catchment can be issued. The minimum flow can be applied as soon as it is ready, either straight away, if they're done by 2021, or by review of the consent. If permits are for longer than 5 years, then residual flows can be applied and any small tributary values can be protected. The main stem of the Cadrona River has been proven by the Regional Council to lose considerable amounts to groundwater and it dries up naturally. In the Cadrona catchment, our water users group, which was previously the Cadrona Landcare Trust, have been actively working with the Regional Council for well over 10 years to make sure that the Regional Council was able to get accurate scientific information and that the Cadrona catchment on water issues is prepared for the end of deemed permits in 2021 and also for the minimum flow change processes. This has included many meetings, workshops and walkabouts with the ORC and the wider community. It's taken a lot of time and frankly we hope that the Regional Council would have been closer to having the suitable, workable and fair plan in by now. In 2018, the Regional Council proposed progressing only the upper catchment, but have thankfully changed their minds and are now working with the whole catchment again. And the community has had multiple discussions around the values of the catchment and it would be possible to move directly into setting the objectives to make sure the plan change will meet the MPS requirements. For us in the Cadrona catchment, the outcome we need is deemed permits changed to resource consents with timeframes in line with those already completed. And a plan change.
Time is coming to an end.
And a plan change for the minimum flow progressed with the good science already available and making sure that any science coming forward is accurate and as little delay as possible.
Thank you very much. Can I keep on saying to just about all contributors, you see me writing and you see everyone else writing. We'll have lots of questions, both for you but also for our team
Thank
as
you.
A result. This is not a useless exercise. Okay, can I have Dougal Montavish, but it is Dougal coming forward, and also Sir Alan Marks.
Thanks,
Alan.
Thank you.
Okay, dear. Sir Alan, Dougal, it's lovely to have you here tonight. 5 minutes.
Madam Chair, councillors, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Alan Mark. I chair the Wise Response Society that was established to encourage government at all levels to develop and encourage a sustainable environment in order to not put our children in future at risk. And in this context, we offer 4 key concepts that hopefully will assist council in framing the water allocation planning regime, which is their responsibility. Our Secretary Dougal Montavish will outline those 4 concepts.
I'll skim some of them because some of the points have already been covered, Madam Chair.
Yep.
Point one is the backdrop to this plan change is a sorry tale of planning failure in key areas of water allocation and water quality in Otago. And I give 3 examples there, 6A, the regional policy statement and now the current water permit changes, which is not 20 years now, I understand, but 30 years has been available for that. The message is that we can have all the plans we like, but if there is not the will and the capacity to implement and enforce them, goals will fail. We can no longer afford this endless cycle of planning to plan and kicking the can down the road while the environment degrades. Council loses credibility when it does not follow through on its plans. We are therefore supportive of the Minister's insistence of the 2021 deadline being upheld. The second point is the key, the water permit plan change is based on the understanding that ORC's primary responsibility is to ensure that natural and physical resources are managed sustainably for the wider community. In his plan change, Peter Constantine recommends potential impacts on existing water abstractors and existing priorities and deemed permits be given consideration, but there is no suggestion similar consideration be given for in-stream life-supporting and amenity values, a point raised by Sue Matterin. Yet it's becoming increasingly obvious that healthy, functioning ecosystems and associated ecosystem services underpin all economic activity, so they need to be restored and protected without delay. In general terms, the minimum flow in a river sets the quantity of the habitat, the flushing flows or variability, the quality of the habitat, and flood flows the form of the river. Accordingly, before any new consents are granted, we consider this plan change requires an environmental flow regime be established for each river. This should be based on the best available hydrological and ecological information or modelling, if this isn't available, which will be reviewed once the other statements and plans are operative. Point three, in a plan change specifically for deemed permits, there is a risk of rolling over the status quo without adequate assessment against the broader sustainability issues. The murky yellow haze that enveloped us all a few days ago, courtesy of Australia, and I'm not talking about the cricket, is just one of the more graphic reminders that we in the West must all profoundly change our way of life if we want to avoid an environmental disaster. The current preoccupation with maximising value from land to the individual needs to shift to a more genuinely integrated approach that maximises collective resilience at catchment scale. This requires systems review. So the consenting process under this plan must do nothing to frustrate this need once the new plans are ready. Furthermore, freshwater management units currently being established have terrific potential as a vehicle to explore what land management changes are needed to achieve more community-wide resilience. And the fourth point, we must build into the allocation process the fact that catchment yields are changing and can be changed with strategic management. The most direct physical impact of climate change is on hydrology, average rainfall intensity, etc. This is already affecting seasonal water availability. Less commonly recognised is the impact of soil, mainly organic matter levels, touched on by Peter Barrett, and regenerative agriculture, and cover management such as soil permeability on the capacity of the land to capture, infiltrate, recharge and release water to rivers in a way that better sustains flows into summers.
Too cool, you're running out of time.
Okay, I'll miss this next paragraph. Allow me to read the last one. So allocations should not be based simply on past use, as proposed by Peter Constantine, but on demonstrating that the land use system is genuinely sustainable, including under the sinking lid, zero carbon emissions policy for 2050. Wise Response believes that rules and incentives are needed to ensure that such broader optimisation issues are considered before water allocation parameters are finalised. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, both of you.
Thank you.
And we will be in contact.
Thank you.
Responding. Our next person is Alison Sutton from the Manuhirikia Irrigation Co-op Society.
And I also have Stu Craig, who's our chairman.
Thank you. all yours.
Ready to go? Go for it. Good morning, Madam Chair, councillors, staff, and all others. My name is Alison Sutton. For the past 28 years, I've sat in the engine room of two irrigation schemes, supporting 14 volunteer scheme directors and their operations staff, acting for and on behalf of our shareholders. From an irrigation scheme perspective, I would want to give you some background. Last 30 years, the Manuhirikia irrigation scheme is near Alexandra, and in comparison to many schemes, is all round diverse. It has 380 shareholders. We cover the activity gambit from larger scale pastoral farming through to commercial horticulture, including niche export, organic pit fruit, nuts, large scale and boutique commercial viticulture, lifestyle blocks, cafes, wedding venues, and an equestrian centre. Water is not only used for irrigation, but also fertigation, frost fighting, and fruit cooling. We irrigate by flood, border dike, gravity spray, pump spray, and for a good measure of honesty, we also have amongst us the gambit of natural human condition, the good and the not so good. The last 30 years can be divided into five phases. Phase one was forming a legal body, negotiating with the Crown, developing all the legal documents. Phase two was learning the ropes and settling in as a new owner-operator. Phase three, raising funding and carrying out deferred maintenance as left to us by the Crown. Phase four, looking to the future by either investigating or retaining opportunities. It turns out that investigating doesn't mean that things are a runner, but at least we have looked. Phase five, commencing preparations for deemed permit replacement 2021. And it is phase five that I wish to quickly speak about. Preparation for 2021 was essentially started in 2012 with the installation of automated intake gates and flow measuring equipment. Sounds routine until you take a drive to the location. All combined, that was $150,000 spend, and now with constant ongoing maintenance, including things that you just don't initially consider, like lightning strikes and account hacking from Eastern Europe. We then started to earmark budgeted but unspent amounts in preparation for the funding of permit replacement. In 2018, we sent out a questionnaire to all our shareholders, gathering a raft of data, which was subsequently logged into a spreadsheet. In addition, we commissioned a GIS expert to assist with scheme mapping. This was not only as a day-to-day tool for ourselves, as part of our succession planning, but for independent assessment of scheme water requirements under Aqualink tables. Following on, the board started looking at the scheme's infrastructure, which is actually priceless and most of which is now 98 years old. We have some ideas about changes or improvements to enable more efficient delivery and are still considering what, if, and how. Rough order costs are scary. Environmental work has been commissioned. This summary gives an indication that as a scheme, and like others, we have put some serious thought, effort and funding towards a process that, until very recently, had a specific deadline with the general expectation that the outcome would allow schemes to plan, transition and bed in for the next generation. Consequently, at this late stage, it is with dismay that we find ourselves being asked to tread water for 5 years, and what of the unintended consequences? Reality is that as in 5 years' time, much of the data that we have collected will no longer be considered current and requiring a repeat of the process. It is also likely that many of the knowledgeable people that we currently have within and around us will be gone, a wasteful way of intellect. Our view is while ORC are thrust into focusing on planning catch-ups and proposed new planning, we as a scheme will have nothing to offer our community. This is with no security, no direction, there will be no mandate to enable prudent investment decisions to be made either for the scheme itself or on farm. The general economy in our small communities will likely be stifled into stagnation with direct negative impact. And sadly, the momentum that we have within our catchment, the collective will to find solutions will all dissipate through the normal comings and goings of 5 years treading water, or worse, through 5 years of return to an unproductive, highly undesirable adversarial process that is nothing but a shameful waste of scarce resources.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, what more could I say?
Well, you might...
Beautiful.
Well done.
I warn you, in 5 years' time, some of us in this room will be dead.
That might include
not just
me.
Retired. Thank you.
Thank you. So now we have Nigel Peregrine. Thanks, Nigel. Come on through. We still have people, another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 to go. So that's why we're being so tight. Okay. You're not Nigel, you are.
Neil Watson. Nigel would like me to pass on his apologies. He's still on holiday in Australia.
God.
We'd have liked to be too.
Exactly. I've been involved in water issues for a number of decades.
Pull that thing closer to you, love?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Better?
Yep.
Including consent renewals in the Taree and Manuhira Kia. I've been involved in the Water Management Strategy Group, and I'm currently involved in the Manuhira Kia Reference Group. And also, of course, the Lindis. I'm aware of how these things can go. I think from a fish and game point of view, the transition from mining privileges to RMA consents is an important event. It needs to be seen as a single event rather than a scatter of consent renewals. It's an opportunity to properly provide for the restoration of rivers and streams in central Otago, restore flows for ecosystem functioning, biodiversity, productive capacity, amenity and landscape. I think while biodiversity gets a high profile, and so it should, people often forget that rivers and streams are productive ecosystems, and that for harvestable species, Mahinga Kai, and for trout, production is an important aspect. It's also important for the viability and resilience of populations. There's no point just retaining the diversity of species. You've got to have viable populations of those species. The current water plan provisions aren't adequate, and I think that's been covered completely. That's a good reason why there shouldn't be, as someone suggested earlier, an alternative pathway to process consents as well as looking at short-term consents. The really important thing that needs to happen is that the Otago planning framework needs to start reflecting properly national policy mechanisms, and it doesn't, and I think you've received reports from your chief executive that point that out. One area that I think is important to consider in this water permit plan change is the issues identified in the proposed plan change 1D, which seem to have just floated off into the ether. There are a number of important issues that need to be carried forward in this exercise. My understanding of the water permit plan change is to provide continuity so that people can legally take water rather than running into the brick wall of October 2021. I see short-term consents as a reasonable alternative to that outcome. 5 years seems to me to be a good period for short-term consent, and it should allow ORC to develop a complete and up-to-date planning framework, which may well be, hopefully, from Otago Fish and Game's point of view, markedly different from the current one. As an aside, the proposal to notify the whole land and water plan together rather than notifying individual chapters is attractive to Fish and Game. It will avoid double handling. It will ensure in the longer term a regionally consistent planning framework. I agree with others who have said that the short-term plan change mustn't simply roll over the status quo. It needs to introduce as far as possible up-to-date environmental elements. These are, after all, RMA consents, not a continuation of mining privileges. But I take the point that we have to strike a balance so that this doesn't become so contentious, that it bogs down and takes our eyes off the longer term. There are a number of perverse incentives in the current planning framework. One has been the requirement to use water efficiently, and at the same time allowing expansion. 30 seconds?
Yep, yeah, less than that.
The irrigated area. Efficiency requirements do not necessarily result in benefits in rivers. The current policies for establishing historic use of water for individuals is inflationary in terms of overall catchment water allocation, and a better method needs to be established to determine historic water use. An important area is the current difference between minimum and residual flows. Residual flows have a very narrow focus, and minimum flows have a broader focus. And that does need to be, they need to be aligned so that they complement each other and all work towards the same end. We support the idea of catchment groups rather than individual catchments, and we feel that it's important to recognise the naturalised mouth as the benchmark against which water should be allocated. After all, that's the water that's actually available at summer low flows.
Right, you'll have to come to an end, Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I call for the next group, which is Ernst Glue Irrigation? I hope I've pronounced that correctly. Thank you. Tony and Judy Ann, please.
She's with the next group.
Okay, well, it's just Tony.
Yes.
Thank you. So I'm just standing up to get the blood behind my knees.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Councillors, for getting me out of my gumboots for the day. Before I go through my submission, which I've just handed in there and you can read it in more detail, can please briefly paint a picture? My wife's family scratched their orchard out of the arid central Otago landscape 100 years ago on the promise that the government would supply them irrigation water. That promise was kept until the late 1980s when the government decided to get out of irrigation. At that time, Tony Banks and myself purchased the irrigation scheme from the Crown on behalf of the Ernst Glue landowners. With the scheme came the right for water forever. Forever turned out to be slightly shorter than that, and that's why we're here today. Since then, like Alison, two speakers before me, we've battled to keep sufficient water for our needs and meet the changing expectations of our community, and here we go again. So in my submission, my background is outlined to you, but I am a person who's actually out there on a shovel and in my gumboots looking after water. Jumping into the comments that I make on deemed permits, can I say that Ernst Glue has successfully transitioned 90% of our deemed permits to 25-year RMA consents in the last 12 months, and this was without going to a hearing or an appeal. And we would have successfully completed 100% of that transition had ORC not started this current process. For our company, the existing planning process was not an issue. Moving to the terms of the consents that you will be deliberating, We believe that this interim plan change should be all about rolling over existing conditions, and it should have a length of term that allows us to prepare new applications that are based on a fully operative LWRP. If the ORC really wants to get lasting change through quicker, then deemed permit holders like myself should be encouraged to apply for long-term consents now. I can think of a number of incentives that would encourage us to do that. Our work on the Fraser River has shown that good outcomes can be achieved if the irrigation community can get a length of time that warrants the cost of going through the process. Collaboration. When something new is introduced, which you guys are about to do, and planners are involved, dumb things will happen. That's just what happens. Conditions slip into consents that create operational nightmares for people like me because the process does not easily allow for practical individual solutions. Our company offers our support in helping ORC to fix some of those problems. And can I ask, Madam Chair, if you think of a consultants forum, it should have some practical people in it as well as our consultants. They're lovely, but they're not getting their feet wet.
Understand where you're coming from.
So much of what is presented in my submission will be put far more eloquently by consultants who appear before you today. They will give you the rules and wording that can be applied to what I am asking for. As a practitioner who vowed to retire once my deemed permits had been transitioned prior to 2021, I'm asking you to give me that opportunity. Otherwise, I will have to hang around until 2025 or longer to keep this new lot honest. And just in closing, decisions that you people make today or this afternoon are going to affect myself and my family for the rest of our lives. It's really, really important. Thank you.
We won't be making any decisions this afternoon.
They'll come.
This is just exploratory. Okay, thank you.
My email and all that's on.
Can I have Kyburn Catchment Group? I think I've got Judy Andrews and Hamish McKenzie, correct? Thank you very much, Tim. The Kyburn Catchment Group. Thank you. Hamish.
Good morning. My name's Hamish McKenzie. I am a farmer in Kyburn, and I'm a member and director of Kyburn Catchment Limited. Just as a bit of oversight, we started... After 1991, we knew that there was a deadline, 2021. So as a group, we formed our group in 2006. And on the 31st of October 2019, we were granted a 35-year consent through the Regional Council to take water out of our catchment. Just as a ballpark figure, over that 13 years, it cost us $680,000. So I want everyone in here to be aware that if there are going to be five-year consents granted, it took us 13 years to get a consent. So I don't kind of understand how it's actually going to work. And I kind of liken it to the poor people who paint the Golden Gate Bridge. They do one side and finish it, then they've got to start the other side. This is just going to be a continuous process where no one wins. But I'll get on to a bit of the detail of how we went about getting our consent, because this is a real success story of how a community group can work and work with everyone else in and around our community who is involved and has a stake in fresh water. So, as I said, we formed the group and we set up a company, and we employed many, many consultants to help us out because we didn't have the technical expertise to apply for the consent that we were wanting to be granted. We worked extensively with DOC, Fish and Game and iwi, and we've gained approval from all of them, and we've got memorandum of understanding with those groups to work with them in the future to provide a healthy waterway. We have many, many conditions attached to our consent that we just have to do to be able to get another consent in 35 years' time. So we've agreed to do a lot of photographic monitoring, all sorts of other things, and involving those stakeholder groups to help us out with that. There is a comment before by someone whether the one-size-fits-all doesn't necessarily work in Otago, and I agree with that as well. But I'd also like to say that if you look at the broader picture of a community group, then the community group does work really well. It really does. The permit process for us has been extensive and comprehensive, and it's taken us a lot of work. And look, you know, while we understand that, you know, a healthy river is important, we as farmers and other interested water users have no statutory right, and we're not publicly funded like a lot of the other groups are. There's just a couple of things for me personally that I'd like to say. That when we got a 35-year consent granted, it gave us the real initiative to be able to invest in our properties to develop better systems. So for me personally, I've spent $750,000 in the last 9 months building a storage pond that will mean that I don't have to rely on the river so heavily during the dry times. I can use my storage pond without having to draw down on the river. And I know that everyone else in our group has either done that or is in the process of doing it. And yep, I know, I'm counting down. So a short-term consent of 5 years is really short-sighted. Unfortunately, it is. I don't want to be sitting here in a few years' time going, how are we going to rebuild Otago, because our communities have been killed by such short-sighted policies that have been put together that don't actually work. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for coming in. Can I call, therefore, Duncan Coburn. We're doing Land Pro, Will Nicholson and Claire Perkins. Thank you. Did we have somebody else before who talked from Land Pro? Hillary Lennox.
I know.
Kate
spoke from Land Pro. Okay.
Good morning, well, almost afternoon. My name's Claire Perkins, and I'm a senior planning consultant with LandPro, and I have with me Will Nicholson, who's one of my colleagues. So we're here speaking on behalf of deemed permit holders outside of those priority catchments. So most of these clients are located on small waterways with only themselves or one or two other users in their catchment. Many of these waterways flow directly into the Clutha or Lake Dunstan, just to give you an idea.
Thank you.
So there's a few things we just wanted to raise. A few have been touched on briefly, so we'll just run through them quickly and we can provide these notes this afternoon. So in terms of retaining the existing consent pathway as an option for deemed permit holders, the ability for water users to continue along the current consenting path and seek a longer term of consent with the restricted discretionary or discretionary status should be retained in non-priority catchments. Many of the applications have been significantly progressed, and some of which have already been granted and many have been lodged. These have included comprehensive effects assessments with considerable time and money spent on understanding the hydrology and ecology of a given watercourse, with mostly, in those cases, site-specific surveys. Many are also on smaller water bodies that are unlikely to end up with specific minimum or residual flows defined in the revised plan, meaning it would be reasonable to allow these applications to continue to be assessed as restricted discretionary or discretionary activities. These applications do not warrant short-term consents because of the nature of the catchments they are in, the amount of data available on in-stream flows, historic use and in-stream ecological values. In some instances, minimum flows or residual flows can be imposed on these longer-term replacement consents where there is robust hydrological and ecological data and they are proposed by the applicants and agreed upon. We already provide an assessment against the NPS requirements for these applications, and water quality is often in a very good state in these water bodies. Review conditions can be sufficiently robust to give OIC the security it needs to allow any new or revised flows that arise from the revised plan to be included. If an applicant has committed to significant improvements in water take and or use efficiency, OIC should be willing to consider a longer term consent. A 5-year consent term would be insufficient to secure funding for these improvements. It would mean that significant environmental improvements would be delayed for a further 5 years as a result of the plan change, which was contrary to its goal.
If DEM permit holders are required to head down the 5-year consent route, it is assumed that there would be no expectations around conversion to more efficient irrigation and water conveyance in the interim, as banks are unlikely to provide financing for such a short consent term, as we've discussed earlier. DEM permit holders may also have difficulty addressing issues of non-compliance where significant investment is required to ensure water infrastructure is fit for purpose. If defaulting to a short-term consent is mandatory, what guarantee can ORC give that applying for a replacement consent post-plan change will be affordable and straightforward? Alternatively, if any approach other than a permitted activity approach is taken, then a short-term consent should take a simple application form approach. Otherwise, full application details would be required in order to be considered complete under Section 88 and Section 104 requirements, and that is quite onerous for such a consent. Applicants will want to know this, given how much time and money has already been spent on preparing the current applications. There needs to be a focus on communicating very clearly with DEM permit holders on what this process might look like to alleviate the uncertainty that currently surrounds this issue. As Hilary mentioned earlier, duration also needs to be considered. The time it takes to prepare applications and have expiry dates 6 to 12 months at least after the plan is made operative. While a residual minimum flow may be appropriate and easily definable for some permits, in other situations there is no clear answer without substantially more science work. Any expectation in a plan change to require a residual flow will complicate the process for what is a short-term consent and could drag the process out, thereby negating the benefits of a short-term consent if half of that time is tied up in negotiations, affected party discussions, hearings, etc. A better solution to residual flows is more likely to be achieved through the LWRP and more sound understanding of the science.
And in terms of affected party involvement, the level of involvement of affected parties in any short-term consenting process needs careful consideration. There needs to be a balance of statutory responsibility with the scale and significance of effects and the ability to progress through a consent process. Ourselves and many of our colleagues, both within and outside LAMPRO, are currently held up in the process waiting for affected party sign-off, which is not forthcoming, but neither is a robust discussion of a way forward with those parties who are defaulting back to the future LWRP process. This leaves applicants waiting in limbo.
So with regards to policy 6.4.2a, given ORC's current policy of granting no more water than has been taken in at least the previous 5 years, how will this impact applications for DEM permit replacement post-2025? It may be that some users will be unable to keep up an adequate take record as they will be waiting on longer-term water security before they invest in water irrigation, storage, etc.
In terms of application of any new policy...
Got 30 seconds.
Yep, two small paragraphs left. Any policy direction broadly across Otago, we're just concerned that any policy direction from OIC needs to be clear. We've been involved in some recent discussions just prior to the end of 2019 with affected parties and council staff, whereby there was mention of groundwater permits receiving only a short-term duration to tie in with the future planning framework and the life of the current plan. We'd be very concerned if whatever policy comes out of this plan change gets applied to all the groundwater permits and connected groundwater permits in the region, as well as new surface water permits and catchments that are identified as having allocation available. And just to sum up, in terms of collaboration, collectively as consultants, we bring a wealth of knowledge of DEM permits in the region over a long time frame from the perspective of water users. Going forward, we need to develop a collaborative working arrangement between council staff, stakeholders and consultants to achieve what is a significant shift in the planning framework in Otago. The only way to achieve the best outcome is to work together. We can't afford to press on and risk some parties being completely offside, as this could disrupt the necessary efficiency of the process. If we can agree collectively on parameters, we can facilitate a better planning outcome for the community.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Gavin Hurley.
Have you seen them?
Gavin, are you here?
You are.
Good.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Congratulations on your appointment as Chair.
I'm not sure whether it's congratulatory. Go on.
I'm Chair of the Sahlburn Water Company, which was a company formed a number of years ago. We were the first catchment to take on the challenge of moving from the mining privileges to the team system of permits. This was a long five-year period, but we ended with the successful outcomes to all parties, to the environment and to the water users. And I'd just like to acknowledge the input and the focus of some of those interested parties that we worked with, and you've heard from one of them, Neil Watson, this morning. There's an old adage in central Otago that if you tamper with your neighbour's wife, you're likely to get into a bit of trouble. But if you tamper with your neighbour's water, you are in real deep trouble. Such is the value of water in the Maniototo and other areas.
It's not helpful, Buster.
There's three things this morning that I wish to touch on very briefly, is to dispel a common myth. I want to give a background to the hospital pass of 2021, which we're now dealing with. That's why we're here today. And suggestions going forward with reference to the bespoke water permits plan change. The myth is, and although I haven't heard it this morning, as these mining rights are no longer used for mining, it's long overdue that all these permits be cancelled. Well, that's utter nonsense. Very few of the current mining rights were ever used for mining. They were issued by the Mining Wardens Court for pastoral farming, for domestic initially, and domestic consumption, stock water, and for irrigation. I've firstly owned seven mining rights over my period of farming, and none was ever used for mining. We're only here today because of a hospital pass that the politicians and the Wellington bureaucrats in the late 1980s, when the RMA was being crafted. And rather than honestly fronting up to the compensation issues of the state unilaterally cancelling property rights, Geoffrey Palmer, the then minister in charge of the RMA, chose to kick for touch with a 30-year extension. Then these property rights would be snuffed out. And you as administrators and we as mining right holders now have to pick up the pieces of this classic piece of political expediency of 30 years ago. So going forward, my plea is don't stop the current momentum. That's been a current theme of the many presenters this morning. There's been a lot of work, a lot of expense by catchment groups who have confronted the challenge of meeting the 2021 deadline. A number of applications are due to being lodged. Please don't stop this momentum. A five-year permit change, I believe, will put this momentum at risk. It's totally illogical, for example, in the Upper Tyree, to put five-year permits while a further water plan is being worked on. Replacement permits have been issued for well over half of the tributaries. In fact, Susan McKee put that figure at 78% to the Tyree River, including the major tributary of the Kyburn River. The horse has well and truly bolted. Pigburn users are about to lodge, and I'm one of the Pigburn water users group. This has been the result of a lot of hard work, hundreds of hours of measurements, observations by those users. A plan to deliver enhanced environmental outcomes involves capital expenditure by the current mining right holders. But that plan is now in jeopardy as a five-year permit rather than a 35-year permit that we believe we were working towards creates uncertainty. Spending capital and a five-year permit are incompatible. So where to from here? It's accepted that not all permits will be successfully consummated by the 1st of October 2021. Current mining rights must be rolled over in keeping with Prof Skelton's recommendation to defer the expiry date for deemed permits, a recommendation that unfortunately has been ignored by Minister Parker. In summary, I respectfully suggest Council have two options open to you. Firstly, having been made aware of the many real negatives, as you have this morning from many, many experienced submitters, of a five-year plan regime, have the courage to review your earlier decision. Secondly, if this is not possible due to the ministerial directive which has been placed on you, then in parallel allow the current momentum for long-term permits to progress on a case-by-case basis, as already suggested by such respected and experienced resource planners Sally Dicey, Susan McKeague and Hilary Lennox this morning. Finally, it's easy in such forums as this, almost.
We're winding up.
Winding up?
Yep, please.
I will wind up. I will wind up. The whole trick of moving from the mining right privileges is the spectrum where you've got farming interests on one side and environmental on the other. In the past, the farmers have had unfettered use of this water and could effectively thumb their noses at environmental interests. Those days are gone, and that's recognised by the vast majority of farmers. The trick is to swing that pendulum to somewhere in the middle between those two interests, as, in fact, is required by the RMA. Unfortunately, if environmental interests push that pendulum too far to the left, that will only end up in the various courts, as has been experienced in the Luggett and indeed the Kyburn hearings.
Evan, you are over time now.
I am over time, yep. So I thank you for your time, and I wish you well in your deliberations of the two options I've put in front of you.
Thank you very much for your clarity.
Thank you.
That's great. Can I ask Graham Martin to come forward, please? And then there'll be Carolyn Tamblyn from Coal Creek. And then we can stretch our legs. Thanks, Graham.
Thank you, Madam Chair, councillors. I have over four decades of experience with the management and measurement and utilisation and environmental matters with Otago's water. What I wanted to do today was, instead of talking about the detail of the particular, what I refer to as 320 plan change, the Minister has recommended, I want to take you back and to look at the big picture, because I think the big picture and failures around the big picture has been the primary reason the Council has got itself into the difficulties it has over the last few years. If we look at the big picture was set out in 2014 and refined in 2017 with a National Policy Statement on Freshwater Management, provided an important pathway to future water management with different ideals, longer term perspectives. The Council has had four different approaches to how it goes about implementing the NPSFM. The first was not implementing it, but it was the process used by the Lindis catchment, where minimum flows were attempted to be set and an allocation volume and none of the other elements of the NPSFM. Through that process, which is not quite yet concluded because of appeals, the NPSFM has been given full consideration, as recorded in Judge Jackson's decisions, because all the parties to the appeal process before the Environment Court brought that information to the court. The other approaches have been outlined in the Sowerburn, Kyburn, Luggett, where it's all informal and it's a matter of action by community and community interests to actually apply the NPSFM as if it were in the water plan. Then the most recent attempts was without the NPSFM, but just to set minimum flows in the priority catchments. And that was followed, and most latterly, by a change away from that process, which never really got anywhere, to a process to apply the NPSFM as a plan change for the three priority catchments. Now, I'd note that there is a very sound fundamental reason why those are the priority catchments. I'm not sure that it's well understood inside council or with the consultants. Now, I refer to all that on the NPSFM because if you look at the Parker report, Parker recommendations arising from the Skelton report, you've got to look at what that was about. It was about capability and it was about performance in relation to NPSFM, recognising Minister Parker wants to change that sometime this year and a bit beyond. What that report does is identify a number of issues, and it identifies very clearly that the deemed permit replacement issue needs to be done in a MPSFM compliant manner, which is what was being attempted. What the Minister's recommendation and the Skelton report do not do is they do not give Council a pathway through to completion. It simply gives two or three time slots. There is no pathway that I'm aware of, and hasn't been since 2014, a pathway to actually achieve the objective of implementing the MPSFM over all of Otago. Stalling the permits was solely recommended in order to give time for Council to develop solutions and pathways. But even in advancing 3/20, it's critical that there be a framework of understanding of what that will do, how it can be achieved, and how everything else can follow on. That framework is missing. In considering the bigger issues, got to recognise that human nature is of fundamental importance. You've heard today from a variety of people that have told you that they will take particular stances in relation to this 320 proposal. Personally, with all my experience, I cannot find a reasonable, practicable, possible way through 320. Therefore, Madam Chair, I want to suggest that Council revert immediately to reinstate the process that it had for the three priority catchments, which was terminated in terms of time for plan change, terminated last month. Reinstate that, because that is the backstop that for the major parts of Otago provides MPSFM compliance around deemed permits in the key catchments. If that is continued then and kept to the time that it was to do, then this 3/20 will not be needed. We can proceed effectively, provided Council develops a framework and resources it as it should.
Thank you very much, Mr. Martin. Can I ask the last submitter to come forward, Carolyn Tamblyn? McCall Creek Catchment Group in Roxburgh.
Hello.
Thank you.
So, lucky last. I'm Caroline Tamblyn. We live at Coal Creek near Roxburgh, and my husband's family has always lived at Coal Creek. I'll come back to our family. But much of what needs to be said today has been said, so this is a Coal Creek perspective. Picking up the one size fits all, I'll tell you a bit about our patch. So Coal Creek is a short tributary that flows directly into the Clutha River, just below the Roxburgh Dam. All our storage is in the bogs at the top of the Benja, and the creek has a really good flow until about late autumn, which is when the fruit growers don't need the river, or don't need the creek, but the grass growers do. There's 11 members in our group. There's a real mix of land users and quite a mix of people. Some of them are new locals. They've just arrived and bought their properties. And about half of the members have been in the district for a very long time. Mostly the water grows cherries and a bit of stone fruit, and the rest of it is used for hay, lucerne, winter crop for the sheep farmers. It's quite a small area that's watered. Oh, sorry, I missed out peonies. Quite a small area. We've got really fertile soils suited to horticulture, so it's an absolute no-brainer for pretty well everyone in our group has put in more infrastructure to water more area or improve their efficiency and put in spray irrigation. And that's been really, really expensive, not only in dollar terms, but I want you to remember that some of the people in our group are lifestyle block people. They're on wages and salaries. So lumpy costs like putting in pipelines and things, that's a really big deal to them. But coming back to why do it, if it doesn't make sense from a business case, it's a no-brainer to use the water. Why would you not take the water and use it now for the last 5 years if we can see that we're going to have it taken off us or we're going to be limited and the conditions are going to cost a lot of money? Right, we've been gathering data for our application for the last 3 years. Our application's quite well advanced, and we hope to lodge our application at the end of this irrigation season. The other thing I didn't say earlier that we use our water for is that we drink it, and so do our stock. This is a slightly different topic, but we test our water and we drink it, so I don't know how we are going to improve the quality of our water, but that's for another day, that argument. So, 3 years ago we got our group of 11 people together, and everyone's quite different, coming from a different place with water, so I want to do a shout-out to our consultant sitting over there. He has guided us along. Thank you very much for all his input into our group. It's quite difficult to gather 11 different groups, from a corporate orchard growing cherries to people that have only just turned up last weekend, and he's done a really good job at that. And I also want to thank, and also want to mention the other consultants sitting over there. They're heavily invested in this process because it means something to them. They're not just doing this job as a job. They are really interested and committed to this. I can't see Bruce Monaghan here. I want to also thank him. And he has given us really genuine support to our group in helping to guide us along. The next thing I want to say is a bit different from the others. People have been coming up here and sound quite detached from the land, and I'm probably not going to put it very well, and it probably, to some of you in the room, will sound entitled, and you can take that view if you like. But half the people in our group have been in the Coal Creek group and lived here for a really, really long time. And this show and tell book I have here is the family histories of people that have been in Coal Creek and the Teviot Valley for 150 years. So we have a deep sense of place, of where we live. Our grandfathers and before them enabled my husband's generation to live on our property, and we have two boys, and we would like to see them be able to remain.
Don't have to wind it up.
Okay. So, I don't know, call it, Izzy touched on it, it's a deep sense of place. Now, engagement and consultation. I only became aware of this five-year term proposal at the weekend. So I did lots of reading yesterday and just was horrified at what I was reading. I just don't understand how you got to this place. I don't understand why we are in this room. Most of the people here are from Central Otago. You'll have valid reasons with staff and everything like that, but why did so many of us travel down here for such a short time? Why aren't we at the Golden Gate or similar?
You really will have to, you're well over 5 minutes now.
Okay. I'll wrap it up there.
Thank you very much.
You've already got my contribution.
Thank you very much, Carolyn. It's now being 20 past 12, and we are going to come back into a workshop situation at 1 o'clock. I hope people stay around and enable councillors to make contact with various people and ask questions. Do councillors the first part of the session and to staff, I want to actually kind of gather questions or thoughts that have come up from these hearings that we will need some answers and some response to. Okay? Thank you, people. Let's go and have some lunch.